This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to our friends at Woodbine for their sponsorship. Woodbine, pick, bet, and cheer on great racing north of the border. Speaking of great racing, lots of great racing continues this weekend. As again, we're in that Breeders' Cup prep season. A little bit later on in the show, we'll be joined by John White from Santa Anita. Actually, taped that piece yesterday. And John took a look at some of the opening weekend stakes from last week. And three stakes this afternoon out at Santa Anita, including that matchup between Chancelot and Omaha Beach that should be very exciting. But talk a little Breeders' Cup implications of those races. But top of the show, we're going to take a little look at some of the Keeneland Stakes action with our friend Jeremy Plonk. There's also some great action in New York, and I'll be looking at all that as the afternoon progresses a little bit later on OTB Live. But as noted, Jeremy Plonk, horseplayernow.com, Night School, and much, much more. And this time of year, you can find his selections every day on the Keeneland website. Just click on the Expert Picks link. Jeremy, good morning.
Hey, good morning. If you can't find something to do this afternoon, I mean, you know, the yard work can wait till tomorrow. I think this is a Saturday to play the races.
Also, always like to tout Night School when we have you on, and I'm looking at this upcoming schedule and the next Night School coming up on the 8th of this month, Trip Handicapping. I have to admit, during Saratoga, I'm more of a trip guy because I'm there in the press box every day and I can kind of pick up on some trips. But I'll be interested. I'll check in and see if I can get some notes from folks on trip handicapping, because I definitely think that's one of those ways that you can find some value, because I mention it a lot of times when there's something that's not on the page that you know and the other folks don't know, that's where you find the value.
Yeah, and let me give you one quick hint there with trip handicapping. You know, you think, well, God, I got to be watching every race every day. How do I apply it to be any good at it? One tip I give people is use common opponents. You know, when you see two horses, three horses, four horses coming out of the same race, go back and trip handicap those. So maybe you don't have this great library of notes set up, but the races you want to go back and look for are those races with the common opponents. Did the fifth place finisher have a legitimate reason why he may have beaten the second place finisher that's not showing up in the past performance line? So that's a way of doing almost the Cliff Notes version, if you will, in retrospect, kind of, you know, retrofitting your trip handicapping. See situations where it could apply and then go backwards and try to watch those races. It can really help your time management in terms of being a trip handicapper.
And this past week on the first, the topic was pick six, and folks can always pick up the archives as well. But I wanted to ask you, mentioning pick six, Empire Six tomorrow in New York has a mandatory pay, and there are mixed opinions among folks in the industry on these jackpot sixes, the Rainbow down in Florida, now the Empire in New York. What is your thought, and will you jump in with the mandatory tomorrow?
No, I don't like them. You know, I don't like them. They're not for me. I'm not a pick six player to start with, so now you add another element to it that you have to be the only one to hit it. You raise the bet, or you lower the bet amount, which raises the number of winning tickets when it's going to be a payout day. So, you know, you think, okay, well, it's a mandatory payout day, but those things on mandatory days often pay $2,500, $3,000. To hit a pick six, I mean, you know, that's like pick five money to hit a pick six. So I'm not wild about them. However, I'm not one of these people who says they're the scourge of the industry and they should absolutely go, because candles speak. And people do like them, you know. I mean, maybe it's against their better will, or you know, you're giving them something that's not really good for them, but they like it anyway. You know, maybe it's the fast food and candy of horse racing. You know, that you give them a 20 or 50 cent bet that with a chance at a jackpot. But the popularity of them cannot be disputed. The handle on these has been much better than the big $2 pick sixes. I know the syndicate guys and the whales obviously would like to be playing in the $2 pools and the traditional big pick sixes. So, you know, this brings a different group of people into the pick six, but it's not for me. I was never a pick six player before, and I'm really an anti-low minimum guy because I think it really affects the payout. While I appreciate that some people can get involved, what I find is what people do, because it's a 50-cent minimum versus a dollar, is they just play twice as many combinations. A $40 player is now just playing 80 combinations. They're not getting in less because it's a lower minimum. So all that's happening is that there's more combinations in the pool, more people are hitting it, and it brings the payoffs down. But, I mean, for the lower-level player who's playing and can get in the action, you know, I don't begrudge them that. It's just, it's a different wagering world than what we used to live in.
Yeah, as I say, there are mixed feelings about it. I like it. I played the one down in Florida now, you know, two or three years into it, when it gets up to a carryover of $500,000 or so, just because of what you said. The conso can pay $1,500, $1,800, but I get right in at the 20-cent minimum. You can get in for a $60 ticket. You know, at the $2 minimum, that becomes a $600 ticket. That's too rich for my blood. So I'm willing to, you know, put 40 or 60 in if I can pull out maybe that $800, $1,200, $1,500. And tomorrow with the mandatory, I think there's the opportunity to get a little value. But I get it. And one thing that NYRA does that I think answers a lot of the criticism of these rainbows or these jackpots, when it gets up and all of a sudden you've got a million or over a million just kind of sitting there for weeks until the mandatory goes. New York has had a pretty quick mandatory. Up in Saratoga, they did it every couple of weeks. So all that money got back into circulation.
Yeah, and you know what, too? You know, there's some talk about freezing it when it gets up to a certain point and then setting the mandatory date so that it doesn't get, you know, plucked a couple days before. This seems to what's happened in the last two big ones down in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, it's supposed to go on Sunday, and Thursday or Friday somebody takes it down. So, look, if they're waiting on it for tomorrow, maybe today's the day you want to jump in. But based on a big stakes day in New York and typically a lot of favorites win on those days, it would be hard to come up with a unique ticket today, I would imagine. I haven't looked at all those races around it. But the stakes races that I've looked at, I think it would be hard to get too far off the public in that one.
Yeah, Gulfstream got snake bit two or three times now. It's just been, including just a week and a half or so ago. They got to go on suicide watch down there and look for folks jumping off the top of the grandstand, given the situation. But the mandatory set for tomorrow in New York. But let's shift our attention back to Keeneland. As I say, your selections every day on the Keeneland website, so folks can check those out. Let's go back to opening day and just some thoughts. And I'm going to toss out there one angle I will be watching, because I was doing Keeneland as part of the OTB Live yesterday afternoon. That was in our track mix. And I got onto it maybe two, 3 weeks ago down at Churchill. The Arlington horses coming out of Arlington are getting a little bit overlooked and are running better than their odds. Early on yesterday at Keeneland, there was an Arlington Exacta that I want to say paid about $150. That was maybe race two, and I mentioned it on the show and said, watch these Arlington shippers. Like three races later, there was a two-year-old race, and I said, there are a couple Arlington shippers in here. Keep an eye out for them. I threw them into my Exacta mix. I boxed up a few horses, and again, an Arlington Exacta, $230. So it's still a little bit anecdotal as opposed to empirical, but I'm going to watch the Arlington horses.
Yeah, you know, Arlington was supposed to be down, right? I mean,
yeah.
The first money is there. You know, Kentucky put all their money into the purses. Ellis is supposed to be so boosted now, and obviously Kentucky Downs and Churchill's September meet, and Arlington was supposed to be the one that dropped to the wayside, but that didn't happen here on opening day. I tried a couple art. It's funny, you know, I handicapped 2 days ahead of time because the picks show up in the Keeneland program and things like that. I had two Arlington horses yesterday, but they were in later races after the Arlington horses had already won. So, you know, I stopped the train on them. The two I picked didn't come home, but, you know, they ran decently at nice prices. I think one was third at about 25-1, you know. So we'll have to see. I think one thing with that yesterday, we also saw a couple turf horses run decently on the main track, transferring over. It is really hot and really dry in Kentucky, and it has been for months. There's also the safety issue that's going on around the country. And I think tracks are trying to slow their racetracks down, not water them, not pack them down. They're looser, so they're slower, they're deeper, they're safer. That plays a little bit more to your polytrack and turf horses than your real speed horses and your speed merchants. And so on opening day, we saw a couple of those synthetic to dirt and turf to dirt runners do pretty well. That's what I think we might want to watch. You know, the circuit-wise, you're not going to get a lot of synthetic horses unless you get a Woodbine, maybe a Presque Isle. The Presque Isle horse is probably going to be overmatched on most levels, except at the bottom at Cleveland. So maybe that's the case. Now, if we get a little more rain, it's supposed to have some rain tomorrow in Lexington and then cool off next week. When fall actually gets there, the track is, I think, will naturally tighten up a little bit as we get a little more natural moisture. So maybe early in the meet, you might see this run from the Arlington runners. And while it's dry and hot and loose there, today 85 degrees on October the 5th, sunny skies, zero chance of precip. Tomorrow the temperature is supposed to drop and maybe rain a little bit on Spinster Sunday. We'll see. But I think there's a little, you know, there's a little bit of geology kind of to what might be happening there. As well as, you know, maybe just some good horsemanship. They had horses ready for Keeneland coming over from Arlington.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that is a good note to maybe keep your eyes on, that the Arlington horses may perform a little bit early, but watch for the turn. So if there is a turn, you don't get stuck behind the eight ball and keep playing them. But nice observation there. Again, nice stakes card today. You can find Jeremy's entire selections for the card at the website, and that's going to include a couple other stakes earlier in the card. But I thought we'd concentrate on the grade ones. They'll kick off today in race eight, the First Lady grade one event, $400,000. Fillies and mares going a mile on the grass. Nice field of 11 in here. And Jeremy, while we talk, going to pull up the maybe from Del Mar a little bit earlier on August 31st, and Vasilica is going to be the winner there. She's been a win machine the past couple of years. We're looking at 17 starts and 14 wins. I find her very interesting, but Chad Brown, of course, with two in here, Uni and Rushing Fall, Indian Blessing coming out of a close second-place finish up at Saratoga on the move from Germany to the United States. Julie Foxtrot is going to run second in that race we just looked at. So that one also coming in from Southern California is interesting. What are your thoughts on the First Lady?
Well, Rushing Fall's been so good at Keeneland. I mean, she is one of the absolute legends of Keeneland. When you're 4-for-4 over that track, all in graded stakes company, you know, she won the Jessamine as a 2-year-old. As a 3-year-old, she won both 3-year-old filly stakes, including the grade one Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup in the fall meet. Then she came back in the spring, won the grade one Jenny Wiley there. She's 4-for-4, two of them grade ones, all four graded stakes. I mean, in the last 20, 30 years, the only horses at Keeneland that can talk about a resume like that, Take Charge Lady back in the early 2000s was fabulous, and then the Great Wise Dance. You know, she's in really heady company. This will be the toughest field, I think, that she's faced in those four races at Keeneland, this being her fifth. And as Kate and Bradar mentioned, she and I do a podcast preview for each and every race. You can get those at Bet Keeneland on Twitter, at Bet Keeneland. Kate and I recorded our podcast for today already, and she made a really good point about there's not been a turf course like this at Keeneland during the last couple of years that has been so dry. I mean, it just hasn't rained in Kentucky hardly at all summer. It's been so hot this late into the year. It's a little firmer, harder turf course than what we're used to seeing at Keeneland. The turf rail was out at 20 feet yesterday. It'll be down on the hedge today. So that inside part of the grass hasn't been used at all in months, but it's still going to be pretty firm. That could play to those Californians that you just showed from the maybe, you know, that Juliet Foxtrot was shipping out there. But, you know, Hollendorfer's filly has dominated the West Coast on the grass over the course of the last year. But they could translate a little bit better at Keeneland on the footing than in past years. It's going to be a firmer turf course than Rushing Fall has run over at Keeneland, which could be interesting. She has the wide post position, too. So if you want to try to beat her because of the post and maybe a little bit different footing, perhaps today could be the day. It's a deep field. I just happen to think she's really, really good, you know, and I think she's going to win this. Sister Charlie beat her last time on the number up at Saratoga, going a mile and an eighth. Back to a mile, Sister Charlie is just the best turf filly in America, and I think it's not that close. So the fact that she's not in here, I just think Rushing Fall is the horse to beat. But look, what is she going to be? You know, it's a big field. There are some other options. She's 9-5 in Mike Battaglia's morning line. I think fair odds are right about there. You know, so you think about, you know, the dominance she's shown and the historic nature of her resume, you'd say she should be 6-5. I don't think she's 6-5 because of the conditions and because of the field size and the level of competition here. I think fair odds are about 9-5. And look, do you single her in a multi-race wager? That becomes a key. You know, there's an all-stakes pick 5 today. Do you have a single anywhere else? That almost becomes the question, because I think she's potential single worthy, and I'm going to end up singling her on my ticket just because I couldn't find a greater single somewhere else.
Yeah, and Sister Charlie, the aforementioned Sister Charlie, who she finished just behind last time, obviously a barn mate. She goes tomorrow in New York. All right, let's move on to Keeneland and the 9th race, the Breeders' Futurity. Two-year-olds going a mile and a 16th for a purse of $500,000. I'm going to be interested to hear your take here, because I went back and forth between Tappet to Win and Governor Morris. I'm just going to say Governor. When that horse had the career debut, hey, we're going all over with the board with the pronunciation. The spelling is a little strange. I'm just going Governor Morris. But at first I tilted for the Pletcher horse, because he really did look good in that career debut up at Saratoga, but it was on a sloppy track. It was also 5.5 furlongs, so he's stretching out. Tappet to Win is also going to stretch out, but also look good with the maiden breaker up at Saratoga. It was kind of going against the track that day as he snuck up the rail. We're going to take a look at that event August 24th. Tappet to Win is going to be the number one horse here, and you're going to see in the Live Oak Silks just cuts the corner and comes up the rail, wins by a chart margin of 3.5 lengths. I tilted towards Tappet to Win eventually, but I'll be interested to hear your take. One of those two, or do you have another in the fraternity?
Well, it's 10:19 a.m. as we do this show, Seth. I wish I could get back to you after the fourth race today. I've got Maxfield in here, and I really liked his race at Churchill Downs. The key of the fourth race today is about four horses that ran against Maxfield are all back in the fourth race.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so how they run, Ghost War, Continental Clash, and some others in today's fourth race is going to determine my confidence level as we get a little later in the day. If they all run well, then, you know, maybe as I'm formulating my pick five ticket, I'll know the results for the fourth race already, and that'll help me a little bit. If they all run up the track and the race looks like it could be a little bit false, then maybe I'm not so confident and things open up to some other eyes here. But Maxfield got a huge brisk late pace figure in the debut. I like one-turn milers from Churchill going a mile and a 16th at Keeneland. I think they're a little bit fresher and more forward coming out of a one-turn race. And if you remember, the mile and a 16th races at Keeneland end at the 16th full finish line. So they're not races geared towards necessarily stamina, you know. Turn from home and the race is over at the 16th pole. So I think if you can get up into the race and you can finish with some oomph into the turn, you're in the right position when you straighten out in that short stretch drive. I'm taking Maxfield on that thought process. But again, if the horses run poorly in race number four, then I'm really looking at more of a spread action. I do think a horse who can be interesting in there at a huge price, the coach Wayne Lucas with American Butterfly. He ran fourth in the Hopeful Stakes, but if you remember going back to that race, Godzilla was the big favorite, right, 6-5. And who went out and did all the dirty work to soften up Godzilla and beat the favorite in that race? It was American Butterfly right up on his throat the entire way. He did all the dirty work and faded. Now it's going to be a two-turn race where the pace is not going to be anywhere as near as fierce as what you had there in the Hopeful going 45 to the half in the swap on a 7-furlong race. I kind of think American Butterfly is going to be forwardly placed in here. He's by American Pharoah, of course. He won the Breeders' Cup Classic over the track there at Keeneland. We remember him as a Triple Crown winner, but his career finale came at Keeneland. I think American Butterfly is really interesting at a huge price. I think he's going to get completely left go in that race, and I think he can do some damage. So I like Maxfield as my top choice, but if the race in the race four falls apart for Maxfield in terms of the form line, I might get a little bit more crafty in there and throw American Butterfly in some more spots. But in terms of playing, you know, exactus, tries, supers, I think American Butterfly is your key at 30-40-1 maybe, getting a piece of it.
I agree on American Butterfly. I mean, the career debut was against some pretty good horses, Basin and Three Techniques. The second start won the race and the horse that finished second, Irish Mias, is a horse I liked and came back and won subsequently, and the fourth and the hopeful, as you say, last time. So I agree there. Maxfield, interesting, and I'm, again, doing the handicapping show this afternoon, and I just took a look at that fourth race, and, yeah, there's four coming out of that Maxfield race, including the second-place finisher, Ghost Lore. I will remind people this afternoon to look at that as maybe a little bit of a barometer and see if they can find some value with Maxfield. Certainly having Jose Ortiz on board again is a bonus as well, and everybody in our
Three wins yesterday for Jose Ortiz. Yeah. And the dam of Maxfield is Sky Mesa, or the dam is a half-sister to Sky Mesa. So there's a lot of good two-year-old stakes for him there for this Brendan Walsh trainee. And again, three-win day yesterday for Ortiz. I think there's something there. We talked about that trip handicapping, right? Common opponents. Go back and look at that race in Churchill when you handicap race number four. Maybe you can get a little mix and match of the horses and contenders that you like in that fourth race.
Yeah, as I say, I'll remind people for that fourth race to keep an eye on those and maybe get an idea for the futurity. All right, finally, the Grade 1 Shadwell Turf Mile wraps up the Grade 1 action on Saturday. $1 million up for grabs as they will go the aforementioned mile on the grass. Van Beethoven comes in for Aidan O'Brien. Valid point. Boy, I tilted in that direction early, and then I just, on the buyer numbers, I couldn't quite pull the trigger. But valid point's interesting to me for Chad Brown coming out of the win in the Secretariat. Diamond Oops is a little bit intriguing. Divisadero, obviously, is always one you have to pay attention to. But I pulled up the Wise Dan. Going back to June, Churchill Downs, the winner will be March to the Arch, number 11. Number 2, All Right, finishes second. But number 12, Admission Office, is one that I find very interesting this afternoon. Jose Ortiz jumps on board. This is a horse with a big closing kick. As you can see, watch that 12 make the late move to wind up running third in here. That's going to be the game plan because that seems to be his style. He'll be heard from in the stretch. Will he just get going and have enough time to get it done? But I thought Admission Office was interesting. Your thoughts on the Turf Mile?
There are so many different ways to go in this race. This is a good competitive group. Is there a standout, a Wise Dan, a Tetton? You know, we don't have one of those kind of just, you know, lead pipe type horses in the mile division. We also have the last two winners of this race. Next Shares won the race last year, and 2 years ago it was Suede Law. So we've got some horses that obviously are proven over this trip, and it's Keelan to pick from, not just one, but two defending champions or past champions of the race. So there are a lot of different ways to go. And in my handicapping, I just found myself so torn. So I thought, what's the simplest way? What's the simplest approach when everything looks so even? And I just thought, speed, inside trip, proven at least at this distance or longer. And I defaulted to Bandawa for those factors. Led all the way in the Arlington Million until the final eighth of a mile and was collared that day by Bricks and Mortar, who is the best horse in America on turf. So coming out of maybe the strongest running line, three hole. This horse is going to be speed on the hedge, right? The rail's down today. So Vanderbilt goes to the front or Adam Skitta and goes as far as he can go. I don't know if he's the best horse in the race. I just, like, all the variables are eliminated. You know, we talk about some of those runners like Admission Office coming from well off the pace, Valid Point from off the pace, and a three-year-old against older horses. There's just less questions with Vanderbilt, so it's kind of a default pick, but sometimes that's good enough to be right, and that's what I'm hoping for here. But I will tell you, this is an absolute spread race for me in the pick five. And that's why I said, you know, did Russian Fall absolutely stand over that field earlier? Not necessarily. I just think she's the best horse in that race. And so when you're putting an all-stakes pick five together and you have a race like the Shadwell Mile at the end of the sequence, I don't know what to do with it. You know, I mean, so I'm going to have to go four, five, six, seven deep in there to really have any comfort, which means I'm going to have to single somewhere else. And so Bandle was my top pick in here, but I wouldn't argue with probably, again, I would say probably like seven horses in this field would get no argument from me whatsoever.
Yeah, it makes your mouth water. Field of 14 with a couple also eligibles.
Yeah.
And as you say, you can make an argument for a few of them in there. Jeremy, got to go, but always appreciate the conversation. Again, Night School, the upcoming episode on the 8th trip handicapping. Advise people to stop by there. Also swing by horseplayernow.com. And with the meet just getting underway, Jeremy, hopefully we'll check in again before it winds up at Keeneland.
Sounds good. You can get my updated thoughts today on Twitter, at BetKeeneland. I'll be tweeting there throughout the card. So good luck today, everybody around the country. Fabulous race.
Appreciate it. Jeremy Plonk, HorsePlayerNow.com, Night School, and much, much more. We'll take a break. When we come back, John White from Santa Anita. Again, we talked to him yesterday. Did a little recap of the stakes action last week. Got a little preview of today's stakes action. Tied it into how there may be some Breeders' Cup implications. So right after this, John White from Santa Anita. Stay tuned.
To find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing, Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
As an owner, I love the Breeders' Cup winning your in series.
To win one of these challenge series is a way that we kind of map out our schedule throughout the year with our horses.
If you win one of the challenge races, you have a very good horse.
The King George, which is our winning in race, provides the top middle distance horse in Europe. We saw Highland Reel run in both races.
We know when we show up at the Breeders' Cup, we've got the world to beat, not just everybody in the United States. Breeders' Cup Challenge, win, and you're in.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. Happy to be joined now by John White from Santa Anita. They opened up last weekend, and we are in that Breeders' Cup prep season, so there will be some more of those on Saturday, but we'll also go back to last weekend, the opening weekend at Santa Anita, and get some thoughts there. John, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. How are you?
Very good. We've just been in the studio now for a few weeks, had a couple of road trips. Last Saturday, we were down at Belmont for the Jockey Club Gold Cup, a couple of weeks back up at Woodbine for the Woodbine Mile. And most of the summer, of course, the backstretch at Saratoga. So we haven't talked to you since before our move up to Saratoga for the summer season. How did your summer go?
Well, it went very well. Very pleased. I did some steward work. I was a steward for a week at the Los Alamitos Thoroughbred Meet for a week, and then also went up to the Humboldt County Fair meeting at Ferndale, and that's always a lot of fun up there. That's just south of the Oregon border, and we had a very interesting final race of the meet, which is the biggest race of the meet, the Humboldt County Marathon, and that's where they actually go past the finish line four times, but we had a starter leave a horse behind the starting gate, and then another horse wasn't ready and was held by the assistant starter. So we had two non-starters in the biggest race of the meet, unfortunately.
Go by the starting gate, by the finish line four times. Yikes.
Yeah, because it's a half-mile oval, and it's a mile-and-three-eighths race.
And from what I've read about that, the Northern California Fair sound like a lot of fun, but that Humboldt, I'd like to get there. That sounds like a nice venue.
Well, it really is, and it's kind of a throwback. You go back into time, you cross this river on this bridge, and it's kind of a quaint town. The racing at Ferndale, I mean, it's, you know, there's so much history with, for instance, Saratoga, of course, but, you know, the racing at Ferndale goes back to the late 1800s there, so there's a lot of history involved with the track. The people, the whole town, it's a small town, and the whole town gets behind the track, and it's They actually get a very good on-track crowd, which is another unusual thing these days.
That's great. And how do you like the steward's booth? I know, I think it was about this time we talked to you last year, and you talked a little bit about doing some steward work over the summer. How do you like that?
Well, it's very challenging. I've been doing it ever since 1979, off and on. In 1979, I was hired by the Washington State Racing Commission to be a steward, and I was only 24 years old at the time. So I became one of the youngest stewards in the history of racing. And everywhere I've worked in Washington State, Idaho, and at a number of tracks in California. And it's very challenging. I mean, you're responsible for essentially everything that happens under the track. For instance, Seth, my first year working as a steward, one of our biggest issues turned out to be manure removal from the barn area. The track was kind of being derelict in that regard, and that becomes a health issue, actually. And but I remember taking a tour through the barn area one morning with one of my two other stewards as we were trying to check on the manure situation, and I looked over at that steward and I said, you know, I thought that this steward job was supposed to have an element of prestige, and here I am dealing in manure.
And that's one of the interesting parts about the racetrack, and over the years with Equidelia, I've linked to a lot of stories that are kind of behind the scenes, and I think there's just a lot of aspects to it, not just the steward's jobs, but the other jobs at the track where there are just things you just don't imagine when you look at that particular job.
That's exactly right. The thing with the steward, you can be involved, as I say, in any and every aspect that goes on at the track, because the three stewards are the people that really are overseeing everything in terms of regulations and procedures and laws being followed.
Yeah, and it is a tough job, and they get a lot of criticism. It's one of those jobs, like your job at Santa Anita, morning line odds maker. I think if you do a great job, nobody notices. They only notice when there's something they want to criticize.
That tends to be the case. That's just the dynamic of it. You make a horse a small price, he goes off at a big price, and nobody says boo. You make a horse a big price, they go off at a small price, and especially if they win, you'll hear a lot of flack. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I had David Aragon on a couple of times up at Saratoga this summer, and I said, you know, if you're knocking it out of the park, nobody notices, because the morning line, that's just what they expect. I said, boy, it is a tough job. And I
will tell you, David did a splendid job on the Travers this year, and he took a lot of flack for some reason going into the Travers. There were a lot of negative comments about his morning line. Well, I'll tell you what, when you checked his line vis-a-vis the final odds, that's about as good a line as you can possibly make. That's another aspect of the job is, as you kind of alluded to here, Seth, I didn't hear a lot of people saying, you know, that complimentary to David afterwards. And they really should have been, considering how negative they were about his line going into it. And I just really applauded him as a fellow line maker.
I'll applaud one from last weekend. We were down at the Jockey Club Gold Cup. The undercard had a first-time starter that was a sibling to Lady Eli, trained by Chad Brown. David had him 9-2 on the morning line. I said, boy, the bettors, they hear Lady Eli, they see Chad Brown, that 9-2 isn't going to hold up. He nailed it. The horse won, paid $11.
Well, I'll tell you what, I wasn't on top of that race, but got a text from a friend early that day saying that Philly was running, and that a half to one of my all-time favorites, Lady Eli. When you figure that breeding plus Brown, you just can't fathom that she would go off at 9-2. And as you say, she did. And that was absolutely one of the most shocking things I've seen in quite a long time. And she certainly ran a lot better than 9-2. The people that were smart enough to dive into that were very nicely rewarded, I think.
Yeah, I was on board there, and I was shocked. And as you say, very pleased with the price. Before we move on from summertime notes, as we've talked before, am I right, you've never been to Saratoga?
That is correct.
We have to remedy that.
Well, mainly because through most of my career, I was with the Racing Form or HRTV, and with the Racing Form, I was working Del Mar, and for HRTV,
sure.
I was always in the studio covering races all over the country, so that's the main reason I haven't been. But, and I can tell you this, Seth, that I really was invited back in the early 1980s, I still have the gentleman's card that he gave me, that he said, if you're ever at Saratoga, you can stay with me. And as I say, I couldn't take him up on it because I was working in Del Mar every summer. But it was a fellow by the name of Fred Hooper. Fred Hooper really liked me, and I was a big precisionist fan. And one morning, Mr. Hooper said, young man, he says, if you're ever at Saratoga, here's my address. Just give me a phone number. Give me a call, and you can stay with me. And I'll tell you what, he was an amazing person. Not only did he win the Kentucky Derby with the first horse he ever owned, Hoop Jr., and, of course, as I say, race precisionist, really a great horse. But he was a great man. I mean, he was involved in many things. I'll tell you a real quick story, Seth. Fred Hooper, one time I was having lunch with him at Hollywood Park, and he told me about this match race that he had a very fast thoroughbred by the name of Olympia, and he matched it in with a quarter horse in Florida one day. And he told the story with a gleam in his eye, and it was a 440-yard quarter horse race that this thoroughbred was in against a very good quarter horse. But my favorite part of the story was Fred Hooper said he went out at 4 o'clock in the morning of the day of the match race. And, you know, Fred Hooper made a large part of his money in order to afford buying horses and construction. He was very adept at construction. And he had that 440 yards surveyed to make sure it wasn't 1 inch shorter than 440 yards. And he told me, you know, I didn't want those quarter horse guys taking any kind of an edge on me. Well, lo and behold, Olympia just blew the quarter horse right off the track, won by about 3-4 lengths. And he says, I asked all these quarter horse guys that I had bets with, and I think Fred had like over $100,000 in bets with these people on that race, which back at this time would be like about $600,000-$800,000 today. And he said, any of you guys got another quarter horse you'd like to match? And they said, no, Mr. Hooper, no, we're fine. That's good.
We're good now. Thank you. That's hilarious. All right, let's go back and take a look at last weekend before we get to Saturday's stakes races out at Santa Anita. And again, we're in that Breeders' Cup prep season all across the country, really. But last weekend out at Santa Anita, the awesome, again, grade one event. And McKinsey, obviously a big favorite, 30 cents to the dollar. We're going to watch the stretch run. Will get upset by the number 5, Mongolian Groom, at 25-1, the second longest price in the field of 6. McKinsey, the number 4, finishes second, a clear second over Higher Power. But the Baffert horse comes out of this race. To me, I think he's stepped out of the horse of the year picture because I think horses like Midnight Beach and Bricks and Mortar now have maybe a little more momentum with their season records. And the one we won now for McKinsey, probably still in conversation for the handicap division, because nobody said the division has struggled under this part. But also, he's out of the beast that from us is much off the top class. We'll see you all again.
Going back to the San Juan Capistrano, he got a 50. So, I mean, he's very low. Then he got a 98 in the San Diego Handicap against Catalina Cruiser. He got a 99 in the Pacific Classic. He got a 100, you know, which shows you he actually ran pretty well in the Woodward, a race that your friend Steve Beck liked him in that race, and he was 28-1 in the Woodward. And then he comes up with this 110. So, interestingly, his sire made history in a Breeders' Cup race, but in a sprint Breeders' Cup race. It was one of only two editions of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Sprint, and it was the first edition of that race. And Dwayne Lucas trained Hightail, and Hightail became the first maiden to ever win a Breeders' Cup race when he won that Breeders' Cup race that day. So Mongolian Groom, you know, he was good enough to finish third in the Santa Anita Handicap, and he was third in the Pacific Classic. So, I mean, this isn't like the worst form I've ever seen. I made him 15-1 on the morning line, and I'm not shocked that, you know, he went off at an even higher price. As far as McKinsey, you know, here's a case where his race wasn't really that far below par because his career best buyer was a 111, which he was coming out of in the Whitney, so he might have actually bounced a little in the race coming off a career best. And the 108 is right there with pretty much, you know, his other figures this year, like a 107 in the Met Mile when he had the troubled trip, and the 109 when he was so impressive winning the Alashiba. My point here is that if you go by the buyers, McKinsey didn't, like, run a bad race at all. It was kind of his normal race. So, you know, I'm not quite as down on McKenzie as a lot of people. But you know, the horse that I'm kind of coming out of the Pacific Classic intrigued by going forward to the Breeders' Cup Classic is the horse that finished third, and that's Higher Power. And I think you might get a pretty decent price on him in the Classic. And, you know, he ran a lights-out race in the Pacific Classic, by far his best buyer speed figure, 107, so he had every right to bounce off that. I think that he did a little bit, but more importantly, he stumbled at the start. And that start, I think, was a key aspect to him because he was farther back than he has been in his recent races. And I think Higher Power off of that bad start actually, you know, it's kind of a throw-out race for me. And I think he could rebound under Flavien Prat. And look, can't you just envision it that Flavien Prat wins the Kentucky Derby with a pickup mount that gets the victory through disqualification, and then maybe also wins one of the other biggest races we have in the country, the Breeders' Cup Classic with Higher Power? I wouldn't say that that's impossible at all. I think Higher Power is very dangerous in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Yeah, it certainly has improved and improving since the move to the John Sadler barn, improving through that Pacific Classic, and it's also notable, obviously, the Pacific Classic, his lone try at a mile and a quarter was a nice win.
So I think he's won. He's a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Seattle Sumer. I like the pedigree. And my main concern with him for the Breeders' Cup Classic is what if he just happened to really like that main track at Del Mar and maybe doesn't like the track as much as Santa Anita. That's a possibility too. But, you know, you're not going to have everything going your own way to get a good price. And he's going to be a decent price. He's going to get lost in the shuffle a little bit in the Classic. So that, to me, is the value play at this point. Higher Power in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Yeah, and especially, you know, price-wise, you got what you wanted out of the Awesome Again. He has a little trouble at the start and runs third, but it was an okay third if you like the horse, but that third is going to help your price coming up.
Absolutely, yeah. No question about it.
All right, let's move on to opening day out at Santa Anita, because I love your opinion on the 2 2-year-old races. You would have to think they will play into the Breeders' Cup, certainly. First, let's take a look at the Chandelier, grade one event for the 2-year-old fillies, and it'll be number 4 Best at 1-5 in here for Bob Baffert. Ding Dong Battle with Comical for Doug O'Neill. They battle it down the stretch, but Best in the third career start, now 2-for-2 in the last couple of starts, 2 stakes races, the Del Mar Debutante, and now the Chandelier. Again, Comical, a nice battle to the wire for a neck loss, but Bass gets it done. John Velasquez on board, and that was the interesting story as well, as he breaks the all-time career graded stakes record that he had tied a few days before with Jerry Bailey. But it was interesting that he went out and John performed
last year on Chandelier. Certainly, the Bass win with Kirby, extremely impressive. And to me in the final furlong, and I'll give her credit for winning. But, you know, this was a race that did nothing to scare anybody away from running against her in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, that is for sure. It might have indicated that perhaps going as far as a mile and a 16th and or around 2 turns is not, maybe she's not quite at her best. There's an owner that I always keep an eye on, because I'll tell you what, this guy, when he runs horses, as an owner, you better pay attention, because he has tremendous success and sometimes at nice prices, and that's Gary Barber. And he's co-owner of Comical, and Comical, who finished a well-beaten third at 25-1 in the Del Mar Debutante, really stepped up and ran a very good race here and gave Bast everything she wanted. I just don't think coming out of that race, like I say, it's going to scare anybody as far as the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. The filly that was really more impressive opening week at Santa Anita, and the one I would say is the most exciting going to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, if she can get in the race, is Donna Veloce, who is a first-time starter from the Simon Callahan barn. That filly looks like the real deal to me. She looks like yet another really top filly for Callahan, who's had Bella Fina and actually, you know, some others through the years. So, I think that Donna Veloce actually is the one, to me,
going to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies that I would be looking at. It'll be a tough assignment for her if she does get in, because she's only got one sprint race under her belt. But that one sprint race was, she showed she's very talented, and talent will carry you a long way in this game. So that's who, coming out of opening week, to me, that I would be the most excited about, Donna Veloce.
Yeah, interesting. And before we move on from this race, I mentioned Velasquez on board the winner best, but Abel Cedillo on Comical. I'm not familiar with Abel Cedillo, but certainly I'm looking at the percentages in the racing form, 21% this year. So maybe a jockey to keep our eyes on out there?
Well, no doubt about it. He had a tremendous opening week at Santa Anita. He's got a very sharp agent in Tom Knutz, who was a longtime racing secretary at Santa Anita and other tracks. Tom Knutz, very experienced in this game. He's been a very successful jockey agent through the years. He did a lot of good with Mario Gutierrez once Ivan Pujic retired. And this kid, he looks like he's the real deal. And a big sign of this, Seth, you know, for the fans out there, if you're trying to latch on to an up-and-coming jockey, one of the biggest clues is what trainers is the rider riding for. And I've noticed that the Cedillo has been able to get into some of the top barns that we have here in Southern California. And that to me, was a big sign. One of the reasons he was able to do that, he was so successful in Northern California that we send enough horses here from here in Southern California to Northern California that it makes these trainers really aware of an up-and-coming rider. A similar situation happened a number of years ago with a jockey by the name of Joao Rosario. And I will tell you, Seth, that when I was doing the simulcast commentary on television for Santa Anita, there was this elderly lady who couldn't walk. She rode one of those little scooters, and she would drive up to me all the time, and we would chat. At one time, she drove up to me, and she said, "John, I'm going to tell you right now, there's a jockey riding up at Golden Gate Fields. He will be coming here to Santa Anita one of these days, and when he does, he's going to be the top jockey here in Santa Anita." And my first thought was, yeah, well, we'll see about that. But I'll tell you what, I always have respect for what the fans tell me, because a lot of times these fans are very sharp. And lo and behold, look at how spot on she was. He indeed came to Southern California. He indeed became the top jockey. And now he's one of the top jockeys he's been one of the top jockeys for many years in the United States, now based on the East Coast.
Yeah, it's just it's fun, those kind of stories, when you can get on board jockeys like that as they kind of move up and maybe get some horses that, because of the name not being as well known, maybe get a little more value, and they, before the talent sucks some of that value. I mean, you look at the Ortiz brothers now, you can take a point or two away from a horse. So you think if you got on board them a little bit early, you got that value still in the mix. All right, let's move on. The American Pharoah last weekend as well, grade one event for the two-year-old boys, mile and a 16th out there. Number three, Eight Rings, John Velasquez, Bob Baffert gets it done as the 6-5 favorite. American Theorem, number one, runs third. Number five, Storm the Court, fourth. Shoplifted came over from Saratoga for Steve Asmussen off a second in the hopeful. I thought the Saratoga horses have been performing nicely at other venues, but Shoplifted could only get fifth in this field of nine. What were your thoughts in the American Pharoah?
Well, something that came up the first time here, Andy, here, you mentioned, in terms of we change our surface, the monster in this world surface, a lot of the Pacific, and the new one from your ending of the line, to keep in mind, in terms of the Breeders' Cup, keep that in mind, and I think that's why it was smart of the connections of Chancelot to ship him to Southern California, get some training into him. He's had a workout at Santa Anita, and he'll have a race under his belt over this track. I don't think that is a minor consideration going forward to the Breeders' Cup this year. So Shoplifted, I think this is good that he's got this race under his belt, and he might very well improve off that race. All of that said, I was a big Eight Rings fan coming into this race. And it was, as I said to Steve Bick on his radio show, this was an extremely difficult race to make the morning line, because this was one of the deepest American Pharoahs we've had in many years here. There were a lot of highly regarded horses in this race, like American Theorem, like Express Train, and a Collusion Illusion, who had won the Best Pal at Del Mar. But eight rings to me, you know, Seth, a lot of times bettors talk about value, value, value. You hear that all the time. Well, my feeling was that if you got anything over even money on eight rings in this race, you were getting value. And I made him 8-5 on the line because I didn't know whether people would flock off of him from the Del Mar Futurity fiasco, in which he took a left-hand turn early in the race and unseated the rider and actually took another rival, Storm the Court, out of the race. But or whether people would forgive him for that. So that was a very tricky call in and of itself. But Eight Rings was adding blinkers. I thought that was a plus because of the fact you figured that would help him. And remember, the Del Mar Futurity is run at 7 furlongs out of a chute. In this race, he would not have to be coming out of a chute. He would be staying on the main track. So I thought that was a big plus for him in this race. And don't forget his debut, a 94 Buyer Speed Figure. That's one of the highest by a two-year-old this year, and he did it very easily. So my feeling was this was a great betting opportunity if you're looking for value, because here's the hypothetical, Seth. What if Eight Rings had won the Del Mar Futurity by, say, 5, 6, 8, 10 lengths? And considering the extremely slow final time of the Del Mar Futurity and the just anemic Buyer Speed Figure for the winner in that race, I mean, one of the lowest buyers you'll ever see for the winner of a Grade One race, as Nuki got a 68 in that race. That's as low as you'll see for a Grade One pretty much any time. So it's not hard to envision that Eight Rings, if he hadn't been a bad boy early in the race, he would have won by a big margin. Well, if he's got the two big wins under his belt heading into the American Pharoah, he wouldn't have been anywhere close to 6-5. He would have been 2-5 or 3-5. So here's a case where if you're just willing to throw out the Del Mar Futurity, you're going to get rewarded to me on a much better price on him. People would say, yeah, but he was only 6-5. But I counter and say, well, if circumstances had been different out of the Del Mar Futurity, you wouldn't have even got close to 6-5. So to me, it was a great opportunity in terms of finding some value on a horse. Yeah. And the way he won the American Pharoah, he certainly made 6-5 look like a very nice price.
Yeah, $4 and change. Yeah, you're right there. It was a bargain. You more than doubled your money on a horse where that was, again, nice value given the circumstances. And you make a great point about Shoplifted, and I'll toss in. I was going to jump in there. Folks should watch for horses like Midnight Bijou, I think, who have gotten out there early and are going to be working over the track. A horse like Shoplifted, who may benefit from the race over the track. I think you kind of nailed it. Well, speaking of Steve Bick, I was on with him Wednesday, and we talked a little bit about that. And he mentioned, given the track and the way they're playing slower now, a race over the track or some extended work over the track will be beneficial for some of these East Coast horses.
And for instance, Code of Honor is going to come in at the last minute. So, and he could even vie for favoritism in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Plus, he's a three-year-old going against older horses. Now, he has already done that, and he showed he's more than can hold his own against his elders with his performance in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. But I think it's a bit of a concern for Code of Honor that he's going to come shipping in here to Santa Anita the week of the race. To me, that's a bit of a negative for Code of Honor, who's going to be one of the major players in the race, and especially in terms of the betting.
Yeah, it'll be worth keeping that stuff in mind as you get to Breeders' Cup weekend. All right, let's take a look at Saturday's action. Three graded stakes, and we'll get some thoughts there. We'll start in chronological order with the L.A. Woman. Grade 3 event, $100,000. Fillies and Mares going a quick 6.5. Field of 6 in here, and I go with your morning line. I think Selcourt is going to be the horse to beat, but hasn't been seen since March. So there's always a little question on the layout.
A head scratcher. And she's got a very good record on the main track at Santa Anita. And yes, she got beat last time, but a mile is, you know, they took a shot trying to stretch her out to a mile. She ran very well through the first 7 furlongs of that race against the likes of Secret Spice, Marley's Freedom, and Paradise Woods. So no disgrace to, at a mile, finish behind those runners. And it wasn't like she was beat 10 lengths or something. She got beat under 5 lengths. So she's been working well, and to me, she is the one to beat. Anonymity also merits respect. She gets bet all the time. She's always been highly regarded by trainer Richard Mandela. She was a beaten odds-on favorite last time at Del Mar, but this is a filly who's been very consistent. Look, she's been in the exact 8 of 9 career starts, so you have to respect her. Lady Ninja, I was going to make 3-1 on the morning line. I lowered her to 5-2 because I think there might be some people that might gravitate toward her, impressed by her effort when she broke poorly in the Rancho Bernardo against Anonymity. And actually, it was actually a very good performance on her part to finish third after the poor start. And I mean, it was a poor start. She broke up in the air and was well behind the field. And that's tough going 6.5 furlongs against the likes of Anonymity. So Lady Ninja, I think, is certainly a major player in this race. You mentioned Florida Lamar. And look, I've been watching her closely even before her first race. Her workouts on XBTV were very good, and she was 1-5 in her debut, and she looked like she was going to be really one of the top maybe 3-year-old fillies in the country for Bob Baffert. I know they were very high on her at the Baffert Barn, but things really unraveled after that. Her next race was in the Slop, and she just didn't run much there at 3-5. Her race in the Santa Anita Oaks, you know, she was a well-beaten second there, but, I mean, that was kind of not the strongest Santa Anita Oaks we've ever had. Bella Fina won it, mainly on class, because Bella Fina doesn't really want to go a mile on the 16th, as evidenced by the fact they're going to cut her back to the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. And so it's not impressive to me to get thrilled by Bella Fina going two turns. You mentioned Florida Millar got back in winning form at Los Alamitos and the Beverly J. Lewis, and that's true. But this is where the buyer speed figures can really help you, because the fact you mentioned it's a career best 82, and when you look at the numbers that a Selcourt or even an Anonymity, but especially Selcourt, which he can run, I mean, Selcourt almost always is at least in the 90s. And you mentioned maybe Florida Lamar can take another step forward. Well, she's going to have to in this race. And look, she's lightly raced. She's a 3-year-old filly. And as I say, they were high on her early on. So maybe she can, you know, take another step forward. But she's going to have to in this race. That's for sure, I think. So personally, I think Florida Lamar is up against it here. I would take the approach that I'll let her beat me until she proves to be more that she's in the same league as someone like a Selcourt.
Yeah, and you have to demand the right price to take that shot on Florida Lamar, certainly. Again, interesting edition of the L.A. Woman. Let's move on to the City of Hope Mile Grade 2 event. A couple $100,000, 3-year-olds and up going, as the name indicates, 1 mile on the grass. Boy, nice full field of 11 in here. While we talk, we're going to pull up the King Edward from Woodbine on June 29th. It will be number 2 Synchrony getting it done in there. He's back on Saturday in the City of Hope. Subsequently, he had run 5th in the Woodbine Mile, but really had nowhere to go at points in the stretch and may have been better than that 5th. And it wasn't a bad 5th, but again, we're looking at the win 2 starts back, the King Edward. That one's interesting to me. Catapult has some local connection, so we'll root for that one a little bit, and there are certainly some back numbers, some triple digits that put that horse in the mix. River Boyne, I think, could be a player. Prince Earl coming out of the nice triple digit win over at Del Mar last time. Bolo maybe a little bit intriguing as well. What were your thoughts on the City of Hope?
Well, my thoughts were this race gave me a headache trying to make a morning line on this race, and part of the problem here is the size of the field. Because when you get these 11, 12, 13, 14 horse fields, you end up having to make big prices on horses that are pretty decent, and it leaves you vulnerable to where they could get bet down. So I like True Value at 10-1. That horse could get bet down. He could win the race. Big Score, I hated making him 10-1. I hate making those horses in double digits, but and they're live in the race. I think I have the right favorite in Prince Earl coming off that impressive win off the layoff in the Del Mar Mile. But on the other hand, he's ripe to bounce off that race because not only did he get a by far career best buyer of 101, and he won that race despite not having the best of trips, But it was, as I say, a race off a layoff. I mean, this is the total recipe for a horse to regress off of that. But buyers often drive the betting, and he's got that 101 sticking out there like a sore thumb. So I think he will go favored in this race. Synchrony, I'd be so thrilled if he won, because his trainer is a good friend of mine that I've been friends with since 1980. I've known Mike Stidham since. He trained a two-horse stable at Louisiana Downs, Me Good Man and Viterbo, and he won multiple stakes with each of them. So think of that. How many times have you ever seen a trainer with only two horses in the barn and they win multiple stakes at a meeting? And that was the case with Mike Stidham. So right then and there, I knew this was a young trainer who was on his way up, and he's turned into one of the really top trainers, I feel, in the country. I think it's only a matter of time before one of these days Mike Stidham wins a Breeders' Cup race, or even maybe one of the Triple Crown races, the Derby, Preakness, or Belmont. He's that good of a trainer, and he's getting that kind of clients now. I mean, like Synchrony races for Pin Oak Stable, a very top stable. So this is a very talented horse. He's got the credentials to win this race for sure, and I made him one of the contenders in a wide-open race because I made Prince Earl a slight 7-2 favorite. You mentioned Catapult, and Catapult, if he was able to run back to his race in the Breeders' Cup Mile last year at Churchill Downs, that would probably win this race. He finished a strong second and just ran his heart out that day. But he really has been something of a disappointment this year. Yeah. In fact, last time out at Del Mar, he was beaten as the favorite and finished fifth in the Eddie Reed. So Catapult, we just have to see if he can get back to that 2018 form again. And so far, he hasn't really been able to do it. River Boyne is a very consistent horse. He loves the grass course at Santa Anita. 6 wins from 9 starts. I made him the second favorite in the race. That's probably the most reliable horse in the race to hit the board, I would think, based on his form. He's fresh coming into the race, but he's run well fresh before. And River Boyne, to me, is certainly one of the ones you have to respect in this race. I was listening to Steve Mick's show earlier today, earlier Friday, Seth, before I was on with you, and Jay Pribman mentioned that he likes Andish as a long shot, and that's the type of horse I hate making 20-1. You got Sadio, so you got the hot jockey. And the main reason I went 20, because of the big field, I had to make some horses big prices in this race, is the fact that he just doesn't have much buyer power. His career best is the 89 last time out. But that was his first start of the year, and this is he is kind of a dangerous horse in this race, and maybe he'll even get some bet some in this race. So he kind of scares me, the fact that I have such respect for Mr. Pribman, that the fact that he likes this horse, I kind of wish I now had made him at least a lower price, something like 15 or 12 instead of 20. But you got to do what you got to do. You know, that's the thing about making morning lines. It's easy for the people to knock them or to pick them apart, but you're the guy that's heads on the chopping block, and you got to make all those decisions and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, folks don't realize, and again, we talked with David Aragona a little bit about making the morning line this summer, that there's a total you have to shoot for, and so Everything has to add up at the end, and some of them are going to be short and some of them are going to be long, and then it all plays out in the afternoon. All right, let's move on to the Santa Anita Sprint Championship, Grade 1 event, $300,000 up for grabs, 3-year-olds and up going 6 furlongs. This will definitely have some Breeders' Cup implications because it's going to be all about Chancelot and Omaha Beach. A couple of 3-year-olds, which makes it fun. But while we talk, going to pull up really one of the more eye-popping races from the Saratoga meet. Everybody in the press box was kind of, shoo, did we just see what we just saw? Particularly, this was the day after Imperial Hint had wowed us all in the Vanderbilt. And then Chancelot comes in the Amsterdam, wins by a chart margin of over 12 lengths. Will be the number 12 horse in here. Field of 12. This was just an eye-popping performance. Subsequently runs third, just gets snudged in the Jerkins at 7 furlongs. But now the cutback to 6. This that we're looking at was a 6.5 furlong race. So Chancelot, you made this one the 4-1, 4-5 favorite. Omaha Beach 8-5, and the
bounce off of that. I mean, that's what the speed figure guys, you know, brought that term bounce into the lexicon of horse players. And it's true. I mean, when a horse runs such a huge performance like that, unless you're like a Secretariat or Spectacular Bid or something like that, you know, you're very vulnerable to regress in your next start. And I think that's obviously the case with Chancelot. He went from a 121 to a 96. But it looks like he's come out of that jerkins, you know, extremely well. How about that September 15th workout at Monmouth? How often do you see a horse work in 57 flat? I mean, my goodness, that in and of itself is impressive. And he had a very sharp workout here recently at Santa Anita, 47 and change. And, Seth, I grade the workouts in terms of their times as I go through the entire card. I grade every single workout for a horse since their last race, and I grade it on a star system. And this horse that I've had to grade on a curve since we've changed the track here at Santa Anita. So what, to me, would have been in the past a two-star work for a 47 and change work, that's now a three-star work. So that, and so there's certain trainers that work their horses slow, so I grade them on a curve, someone like a Neil Drysdale. So I have a whole grading system for workouts based on their times, and that was an outstanding workout by Chancelot. Speaking of workouts, though, you alluded to that September 27th workout that was 2 days before Chancelot's workout, and Omaha Beach's 4 furlongs and 46 and change. I did see that workout, so not only was it a top workout for my grading system for workouts in terms of the final time, but Seth, of the hundreds of video workouts I've seen this year, that's the most impressive workout I've seen by anybody. And look, Omaha Beach is up against it, running against Chancelot in this spot at this distance when Omaha Beach hasn't raced since the Arkansas Derby. But I've been a huge Omaha Beach fan ever since he won that 7-furlong race in the slop against Maidens. That was the race that I started writing about him in my ExpressBet.com column. And Frank Marimonti, the track announcer at Monmouth Park in Santa Anita, told me later in the spring, he said, I thought you were completely off your rocker when you were ranking Omaha Beach at near the top or at the top on your top 10 for the Kentucky Derby. And he said before the Arkansas Derby, after he had won the Rebel, he says, well, it turns out I was wrong and you were right. He says he is one of the best three-year-olds in the country. In fact, he says, I think he is the best three-year-old in the country. And he was the morning line favorite for the Kentucky Derby. And said, I think if Omaha Beach had gotten the chance to run in the Kentucky Derby and through the Triple Crown, he would have had a chance to be another Triple Crown winner. I think he's that good. And I say that partly because of what happened in the Triple Crown races, especially the Preakness and Belmont. If Omaha Beach had been able to win that Kentucky Derby, which that would have been the toughest one of the three because Maximum Security finished first in that race, of course, was disqualified. But I feel that Omaha Beach could have beaten Maximum Security that day. If he had done that, I definitely think he would have beat War of Will in the Preakness, and I definitely think he would have won the Belmont, too. So I think he had the makings to be a Triple Crown winner. We'll never know that, and, of course, that's so hard to accomplish anyway. The odds would have been against him to do it. But my point being, I think he's that good of a three-year-old, and no matter what he does in the Santa Anita Sprint Championship, I think he is certainly someone that is exciting coming off of this race. It's great to have him back racing again. And look, I wouldn't sell him short either that he could possibly beat Chancelot. But, you know, it's going to not be easy, as we know, off this long layoff. But I'm a huge Omaha Beach fan. I think he's a special colt. And when we get into these Breeders' Cup times, never sell Richard Mandela short either.
as we've seen, he's had a couple of the biggest days in the history of racing on Breeders' Cups at Santa Anita in 1993 and again in 2003.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this race in Omaha Beach. I can't necessarily disagree your assessment of what might have happened in the Triple Crown, given how the three-year-old scene has played out over the past few months and throughout the summer. It'll be interesting to see what these two three-year-olds do when they face off Saturday afternoon, though, in the Santa Anita Sprint.
And John, don't forget that maiden win at 7 furlongs. That's the only time he's raced around one turn. And he drilled a horse by the name of One Bad Boy. One Bad Boy's not chopped liver. All he did was win the Queen's Plate this year.
And, again, it's just an interesting scenario. With Chancelot off the third in the Alan Jerkins, but the big win with the 121 in the Amsterdam. But he's one of those horses now going East Coast to West Coast. Omaha Beach, on the other hand, has the layoff working perhaps against him, but the good workout. It's very intriguing as they will line up in the gate in the ninth race at Santa Anita on Saturday afternoon. John, as always, appreciate the visit. Always enjoy the conversation. Certainly with the Santa Anita meet underway and the Breeders' Cup around the corner, we will talk again.
Great, Seth. Always great to talk with you.
John White from Santa Anita will head to a break. Come back more on Racing Across America right after this. Hey, John, that was great. Appreciate it. Welcome back. And, man, I got to get that coat pressed. I have not had, and this one looks okay. That one looked a little frumpy. But I did not get my post-Saratoga chance to get to the dry cleaners yet. So, but clearly I have to do it. As I say, that one looked a little frumpy. This one's looking okay, though. Taped John White yesterday, and again, appreciate his time. A little bit earlier in the show, Jeremy Plonk talking some Keeneland. Again, Jeremy's selections every day on the Keeneland website. Great day also at Belmont, obviously, and we'll jump into that. And Talking Horses is just getting underway. They have a 12:20 post time, so I'm going to wrap up so you can get to the thoughts from both the Big A and Andy Serling on really a great, looking forward to the Champagne today. Want to see what Jack Knowlton and Sakatoga's Tis the Law can do against Green Light Go. That'll be a fun race, but it's a great stakes card today and tomorrow. Let me just hit you with promos before we wrap up. Today at the Clubhouse Racebook, $100 Knockout Challenge. That's here at the Racebook. Online, there's a $100 Harness Knockout Challenge. That's today. Tomorrow, don't forget, during Racing Across America at about 5 after 10, the ARC. So you'll be able to play the ARC card tomorrow, including the ARC itself, with Enable going for the three-peat. Should be a lot of fun. Post time there will be about 10:05 for the ARC itself, but you can play the card at Capital OTB. We'll probably start the show a few minutes early because, again, with the ARC going off at 10:05, we want to give you a few minutes. So maybe check in at about 9:55 tomorrow for kickoff on Racing Across America. That's tomorrow on the show. Tomorrow also there's an Empire 6 bankroll. I will be out on the front side of the Racebook tomorrow afternoon doing OTB Live with the bankroll. Majority of it is going to go to the Empire 6 mandatory, but we'll have a few dollars to play as well at Belmont and Keeneland. That happens tomorrow here at the Racebook, but go to the website for your chance to be part of that Empire 6 mandatory payout bankroll tomorrow right here. Again, Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Same spot. You can show up tomorrow to enjoy all the NFL action as well. Wear your jersey, get in for free. You also get a chance to win a jersey. That happens every Sunday during the NFL season here at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Thanks to our friends at Woodbine for their sponsorship. Woodbine, pick, bet, and cheer on great racing north of the border. They'll be in our mix in a little while. About an hour, we'll be back with OTB Live. Woodbine, Monmouth at the Meadowlands, Belmont and Keeneland. Again, great stakes action across the country. We'll have it all here on the network. Thoroughbreds are available tonight. That will include that great Santa Anita card. So stay tuned because we're going to head to Talking Horses and then back for lots of great racing action on OTB Live on a Saturday afternoon. We'll see you in a few.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off Track Betting.